What is the Internet Doing to Your Brain? Join us as we review Nicholas Carr's book, The Shallows, as he asks and answers that question. We also begin a brand new segment, kind of. Not only now picks of the week, but also tips of the week. Don't go anywhere. Wells Tech is coming up. This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network, sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello, everybody. This is Wells Tech, episode 306 for September 10th, 2013. My name is Martin Spriggs, and this is a show about technology and ministry, and where we try and figure out how those two work together to the glory of God. Helping me do that, as always, from New Ulm, Minnesota, Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin, and welcome to a heat advisory in New Ulm, Minnesota. It's supposed to hit 97 today. Can you believe that for September? It's going to be a warm one.
On its way over here tomorrow. So yeah. The last days of summer.
That's right. And this is a special end to summer for me. I'm moving my oldest son to college tomorrow. It's hard to believe that we're sending one off and letting him fly. And I'm got a little mixed emotions about that.
Not leaving the state, though, I understand, right?
No, he's staying within a couple of hours of us up in Northfield, Minnesota at Carleton College. So wishing him the best. And
Absolutely. Blessings on your day tomorrow. That's always a neat experience. First time taking a child off to be on their own. Kind of a unique experience.
Yeah.
I'm sure he'll do fine, Sally.
Can't say I'm looking forward to it, but oh well. It is what it is.
Not to worry. God goes with.
For sure.
So. Sally, kind of a neat day for us as well, not just episode 306, but we start kind of the beginning of a new season. We took a little bit of a different tack this summer and did our summer series as we normally did, a little shorter show, abbreviated some of the features that we normally have. But now we're back into the swing of things, and probably no better way to do that than jumping right into one thing that we do regularly throughout our school year, and that's reviewing a book. And I'm kind of excited about the book this season. It's a book we were introduced to by Dave Tess, who is a professor at Wisconsin Lutheran College. And he's actually done some presentations on this, and I think is also doing a presentation at State Teachers Conference. The book is called The Shallows, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains by Nicholas Carr. Now, don't be confused with Nicholas Sparks. not quite that level, but this is interesting in its own right.
Yeah, very popular today and available on Amazon. If you want to read along with us, you can get it for your Kindle or in a variety of different formats. And so check out the links in the show notes to that if you want to read along with us.
Yeah, and I would encourage that. It's not a huge, it's not a, you know, a novel length book. It really is something that we can chop up and over the course of our season and do pretty easily, and I think it's pretty easy to catch up even if you fall behind. So it's one of those books that just has some nice nuggets in each chapter that we're going to pull out and talk about.
Right, and we are tackling the prologue and chapter one today to get things kicked off. Starting with the prologue, believe it or not, the author immediately visits with one of our most common talked about authors, Marshall McLuhan. At some point, we need to actually read some of his work, but it seems to be a popular topic to discuss, because way back in the 60s, McLuhan, maybe was before his time, predicted the effect the information age was going to have on our lives. And probably the most famous quote is, "The medium is the message." And we've, like I said, talked about that before on the podcast, the fact that the delivery method, and most commonly today, the internet and all of our digital versions of that really affects the message itself. It's not just about the content, but about how the content is delivered and how we partake of that content.
Yeah, almost counterintuitive, and something that, you know, we hear a lot, even in our circles, is, you know, the message stays the same, but the medium can change, which, you know, has some truth to it as well. But when we're talking about the internet and the different channels through which that word can go, whether it's God's word or others, the medium does have some impact on how it is heard, consumed, shared, and that's really the point here. What effect does that have? What are we dealing with this this new medium? What is it, in the words of Nicholas Carr, what is it doing to our brains?
And to that end, we found a really good kind of overview video about the book that is available out on YouTube. We thought we'd plug it in here and include it in our show as well. But it's based on this book and kind of gives you a feel for what to expect with the book.
So you're reading an article online when you get an instant message with a link to a funny photo, which of course you have to share. And now you're reading your Facebook news wall, which sends you to a video of a panda bear attacking a kid. And now you're reading Wikipedia to learn everything you can about the violent behavior of panda bears. And this is what 3 minutes on the internet can be like. We live like this all the time, and it has to have some kind of effect on us.
The net is making us more superficial as thinkers.
That is Nicholas Carr. He is the author of The Shallows, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains. To understand this whole thing better, we need to go way back in time to, say, like, the prehistoric age.
You wanted to know everything going on around you, because the more you knew about your surroundings, the less likely you were to get attacked by a predator. And there's even evidence that our brains release some dopamine, pleasure-producing neurotransmitter chemical, to reward us for seeking out and finding new information.
So getting distracted felt good and helped us stay alive. But the problem is that nowadays, predators aren't much of an issue, but we still have the same brains. And also, there's the internet, which is...
It's an incredibly information-rich environment that the net creates for us, and that's why we use it so much. I mean, sounds, pictures, words, text. And what this tends to do is promote a sort of compulsive behavior in which we're constantly checking our smartphone, constantly glancing at our email inbox. We're kind of living in this perpetual state of distraction and interruption.
Which is dangerous because...
That mode of thinking crowds out the more contemplative, calmer modes of thinking.
And that focused, calm thinking is actually how we learn. It's a process called memory consolidation.
And that means the transfer of information from our short-term working memory to our long-term memory. And it's through moving information from your working memory to your long-term memory that you create connections between that information and everything else you know.
So you've got this awesome life-changing piece of information in your short-term memory, but then you hear that email ding and poof, there it goes. That email takes its place and you never get a chance to learn anything, all because of one distraction.
So attention is the key, and if we lose control of our attention or are constantly dividing our attention, then we don't really enjoy that consolidation process.
But I can hear it now. Someone out there is saying, what does learning matter if all the information in the world is just a Google search away? Well...
That is kind of shortchanging our intellects. If that's the way you're using your mind, just kind of searching very quickly and finding information and then forgetting it very quickly, you're never building knowledge. You're simply, you're kind of thinking like a computer.
Which means that our very humanity is at stake. And it would be a shame if we all got assimilated because, well, humanity is pretty neat.
I really believe that if you look at the great monuments of culture, they come from people who are able to pay attention, who control their mind. That's what allows us to think in the highest terms, think conceptually, think critically, think in some very creative ways.
And it's this kind of thinking that's at risk, being eroded one cute cat video at a time. Don't get us wrong, the internet is good for lots of things, and it should be celebrated. But the best thing we can do for our minds is to find some time every day to unplug, calm down, and focus on one thing at a time. Your email, and those cats, will be here when you get back.
So, interesting video and an interesting overview of the book, as we said. And I think it is quite entertaining, but it does drive home the point that the medium does have a big effect on the message that we receive. It turns out, and I think a quote from the prologue is, that it's just the juicy piece of meat that's carried by the burglar to distract the watchdog of the mind. So you really do have to pay attention to the medium, not just the message you're receiving.
Right. And then Nicholas Carr goes on to say that as insightful as McLuhan might have been, he couldn't really have foreseen the level to which, you know, some of his quote unquote prophecy, you know, would have come true with the hyper-connected nature. This harkens a lot back to, you know, the Church of Facebook discussion that we had, Sally, just the number of inputs now that we have with the internet, the proclivity for distraction, the inability to focus. And that's really the point of chapter one, as Nicholas talks about his journey through the ability to read a novel to his inability to read something longer than a couple pages.
Yeah, it was interesting. He interviewed all kinds of people at the beginning of chapter one, including like English profs who teach upper level English majors in college settings, and who say that their students even can't read anymore, can't read lengthy novels. I think one person was quoted as saying the short attention span was like a staccato quality to their thinking. It was very short, a musical term for a very short note. And that kind of equates to the length of our attention span these days. As I was reading Martin, I was wondering if I was going to be able to make it through the book, because it's not very encouraging that we are no longer a reading society.
Yeah. And that's probably a good conversation to have, Sally, because this does resonate with me. I see it with emails. You know, I really have not as much tolerance for longer paragraph form emails. I do a lot of skimming, and I really appreciate those people who do more bullet points and highlight different points that I should be paying attention to. It helps my mind. When I read a book like this, I'm reading it in smaller pieces and pulling stuff out and not just going start to finish either. So I'm seeing this happen in my own life as well.
Right. And I think there's a trade-off. It's coming because that's what the net is teaching our brains to do. That's the point of the whole book. You know, we do think quicker and shorter and faster. We're hungry for absorbing more information, but in the process, we're losing the process or the ability to contemplate, to think deeper thoughts.
Thinker. Right. Right.
Yeah, thus the title, The Shallows, because our thinking just doesn't have time to comprehend and draw conclusions and things like that when we're on this hyperactive thought process flow.
Yep. And again, you know, the depth of our knowledge is shrinking, but the breadth of it is widening. So we're introduced to more things, but that, I think, tends to enhance, maybe is the wrong word, but exaggerate our inability to stay, you know, in one place. So we're constantly moving all over the place. And, you know, there's some satisfaction in that. But at the end of the day, if you don't exercise that deep thinking, the ability to kind of take a topic from start to finish and get smart, you know, on a deeper level, then you've lost something. You've lost the ability to specialize or add to the the dialogue in a more meaningful way. And that's a dangerous thing. And I think that's what we're going to find out in the rest of the book. It's very important to not lose the ability to take a topic and drill down and research and get to the bottom of things and kind of plumb the depths of a topic rather than, you know, just cherry pick.
Yeah, I'm smiling because you said the breadth of our knowledge has widened. I think it's as wide as Google these days, because as long as you can Google it, boy, you can be an expert on anything, don't you think? And of course, everything you read on the internet is true, so makes it really simple just to have Google at your disposal. I really enjoyed the latter part of the chapter. It was kind of a trip down memory lane, Martin, because he looked at his progression as computers kind of infiltrated the author's life. And he started college in 1977, just a little bit before my day, but basically at the very beginning of the computer age. He went to Dartmouth, and he said there was a mainframe on campus. And even though he wasn't a geek like some of the computer kind of people, he ended up spending a lot of time just exploring the possibilities with the mainframe computing. And that progressed to his own purchase of a computer in 1986, his Mac Plus that he purchased. I smiled because that was the year that I got my first Mac as well. And he was really funny because he said he carried it back and forth to work. So can you imagine that boxy Mac Plus being a laptop portable computer for him? But he used it at work. He used it at home. But he was totally disconnected. He wasn't part of the connected age that we live in now. Right. And even with that, he talked about doing a lot of word processing and feeling compelled to print out documents to edit with pen and paper instead of editing on the computer. And suddenly one day he turned into editing on the computer.
He was the word processor.
Exactly. The joys of copy and paste and delete became alive to him. And I just kind of laughed because where would we be without online or, you know, inline editing now? That's certainly the way we do things. And he said he became the word processor in the process. So,
yeah. And he progresses through the age of the modem and how that just kind of accelerated this process where, you know, good old CompuServe and Prodigy and AOL, I think I had accounts on all of those at some point. And then information just exploded at that point when Google came on the scene, and you were able to find things with just a couple clicks, and storage was no longer an issue. And you know, his brain said, "I need to be connected, or I'm not whole." And I think some of us feel that way too now with our smartphones and tablets and the ability to look up things on demand and not have to remember or know things. You don't have the set of encyclopedias sitting on the shelf anymore. It's always with you. Very different paradigm, very different way of thinking, and a very different way of living, which is the point here, and a different way of learning. So I think the everybody in our audience probably has something in the game here, you know, whether they're pastor, teacher, layman, or laywoman, it really doesn't matter. All of us are affected by this, either on the delivery of content, the consumption of content, or both.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Martin. I kind of took a step back the other day as we were planning the show and said, you know, why are we doing this on Wells Tech? Why does Wells Tech as a community care about the effect of the internet on our brains? And I think it certainly has a huge effect on our ministry efforts, whether they're personal or public ministry efforts. Number one, we want to reach lost souls, and those lost souls are having these effects on their brains. They're different people than the type of people we used to do outreach to because of the effect of this information. And so our communication with them also needs to probably change to fit the way that they're thinking today.
Yep. You know, our tagline all along, Sally, has been trying to find the intersections of technology and ministry. And sometimes those are on a collision course. Mm-hmm. And when we read books like this, we can kind of identify where those hot spots might be, where the, you know, the signals may be a little bit crossed, and there are going to be some problems. And we've never said on the show that the internet is the be-all, end-all of ministry. It's a ministry tool, but, you know, used in inappropriate ways or in ways where you're not quite sure what it's doing or the effect it's having, that's bad too. So those are collision courses we're trying to identify and figure out what to do about it.
Yep, and I'm looking forward to reading more about what Nicholas Carr says about the brain. I think we're going to get into a little bit more heavy-duty brain stuff in this book, and it should be really interesting and enlightening, I hope.
Let us know what you think. Grab a copy either on Amazon or, yeah. Is this you think this would be at a local bookstore or a local library, Sally, at this point?
Oh, sure. I think it's got some traction for sure. It should be around. Well,
grab a copy.
My copy has a little thing on the front that says finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. So I think it's got some traction for sure.
Very good. Very good. Okay. As I mentioned at the top of the show, this is kind of our back to school show where we're trying to jump back into the swing of things. And we've made a couple changes. We've decided to jettison the news and tech because I think people can kind of keep their ear to the internet and find out what's going on. There's a big Apple event coming up this week, and I'm sure that the mainstream news media sources can provide that. We may bring those up once in a while in the course of our conversation. But one area we want to kind of amp up are the areas where we're providing resources. And at the top of that list is ministry resources. And we're going to put out a challenge, Sally, I think, to our listeners to help us feed this segment of the show, because a lot of the things that are truly ministry resources are things that maybe you and I wouldn't use on a day-to-day basis, but somebody in the pastoral teaching ministries would. So they're able to kind of vet some of these tools and give an honest review. So we're going to encourage you all to send us your best ministry resources. We're going to pick one each week, and that's not to say that, Sal, you and I will not come up with our own, but we'd like to hear from you, our listeners and viewers, what your best ministry resources are, whether they're classroom or pulpit or catechism class related or Bible study related, personal study, any of those kinds of things. Share those with us, and we'll feature one a week. And at the end of our season here, probably maybe next summer, we will maybe give away a nice prize to just a random ministry resource provider. So if you want to get your name in the pool, so to speak, and this will not just be an insignificant t-shirt or something like that, or a screen cleaner, but something of more substance. So we'll maybe review that a little bit later, but please share with us those ministry resources so we can share those with everybody else.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this, Martin. I know that on our Wells Tech site, we have a lot of our archive, basically, of ministry resources available. We've talked about a lot in the last 5+ years, but you know, some of those could probably be revisited as well. So I think there's plenty of ministry resources out there. I think with the digital age, more and more being created on a regular basis, and obviously we're not going to know about all of those, so we are eager to learn and listen and hear your reviews of ministry resources as well.
Very good. Along with that, we've added a new segment, kind of a variation of our picks of the week. We've kind of called this our tips and picks of the week, although we had far fewer tips and far more picks. So we decided, maybe I decided, and said, Sally, how about we do this? We're going to separate those out. So each week, we're going to do tips of the week, and then followed by picks of the week. Since our picks of the week is a really popular segment, we thought, well, more is probably good. So, Sally, for this segment, I think for tips of the week, I always make you go first for picks. How about if I go first for tips? Does that sound fair?
That does sound fair. Go for it.
All right. My tip of the week, both my tip and pick have to do with Google Chrome, the Chrome browser. I know a lot of you use that. I use that on a regular basis. Sally, I think you use that on a regular basis. My first tip of our tips section is how to change where Chrome downloads files. And let me do a quick screen share for those of you following along at home. Let me see if I can get on the right screen here. Here we go. So the easiest way to change that is, the only way to change that is to go to the three bar icon in the upper right. That's the customize and control Google Chrome area. I'm going to click on that and then go to settings. So we'll go to settings, and I'm doing it on a Mac, but you can do this on Windows as well. Works the exact same way. And you'll notice on this settings screen, there is nothing here that talks about where to download files. And I hope you know what I'm talking about. When you click on a link, it appears at the bottom, and then some people are just totally baffled as to where these things go. And the only way they can find them is to click on, you know, the link at the bottom. But they are actually stored in a directory that Google is very consistent in using. So if you want to change that, some people do, you actually have to go into advanced settings. So at the very bottom of the screen, it'll say show advanced settings, and then that'll open up a whole different section at the bottom. And if you scroll down, there is a section there called downloads. And by default, usually it downloads into your downloads folder. I think this happens both on Mac and Windows. So right next to that is a change button. And if you click that, it'll allow you to save those downloads to wherever you want. So if you want all your downloads to go right to your desktop so you see those right away, you can do that. Or there's a checkbox that says ask where to save each file before downloading. So if you want to pick and choose, say download some in a pictures folder, just download some to desktop, download some to the downloads folder or documents folder, that's the box you want to check. So it's very easy to set up kind of a custom way for you to download files in Chrome. IE does something similar, but for those of you that use Chrome, just go to Settings, and then Advanced Settings, and then Downloads. That, Sally, is my tip of the week.
I learned something new today, Martin. Thank you very much.
Sure. How about you? What did you come up with?
My turn for tip of the week. I'm going to share my screen as well. Not easy to do, but let's start here. And what I'm sharing is a typical WordPress blog posting area. So this is kind of the behind the scenes of how I post the show notes on the Wells Tech podcast. And very typical of any content management system that's around today. The Web 2.0 world we live in allows us to add content right on the website. And you typically do it with a set of buttons and things that you can use to format the content. But I've dealt many, many times with challenges around formatting content for the web. And primarily those challenges get introduced because oftentimes we want to copy and paste content into a WYSIWYG editor. For instance, I have available to me, I'm not quite sure if you're seeing all that. Yeah, let me try a different screen share because I want you to see my whole screen. I'm going to toggle to full screen here. And so I have a PDF document. This happens to be our Wells Tech Camp program that we're going to hand out to the people that attend Wells Tech Camp this coming weekend at Martin Luther College. And it has a lot of different formatting. You can see I have some lovely orange characters there. I have things bolded. I have indents. I have bullet points, all kinds of formatting. And it would be wonderful if I could just copy and paste all this content right into my blog post that I want to make on my content management system. But when I do that, I get a lot of extra heavy coding behind the scenes. And also I lose the ability to do a lot of formatting of my own in the content management system. Things just kind of get wonky when you copy and paste directly into a web editor like this. And so my recommendation to you and my tip of the week is to always paste into a text editor that strips out all the formatting.
Great idea.
I just use the Windows Notepad. And I just paste here, and things look a lot less pretty when I do that. Unfortunately, you lose all your formatting, but that's really the for
idea.
The best.
Yes.
It's much better to do your formatting in the WYSIWYG editor on the web. So once you've pasted it here, then you need to re-highlight or select all the content and copy again from the stripped out version in Notepad. And then you can paste into your editor and do your formatting here. And it's really not that hard. Most all content management systems I deal with have things like indent, or bullet points. I'd have to put in the proper returns. Let me put a return in here, and I bet I can make this happen. And it just makes it a lot cleaner coding behind the scenes to be able to do the actual formatting right here on the web. So my recommendation across the board is to use a text editor like Notepad in Windows to copy your content into Notepad, strip out all the formatting, and then do the formatting on the web in the WYSIWYG editor. You'll get a lot cleaner pages, they'll load quicker, and they'll be a lot less frustrating to deal with because of all that behind the scenes coding that you're getting rid of.
Absolutely. Now, Sally, some of those WYSIWYG editors I know have a little button or two that you can add, kind of do that same thing, whether it's Word content or, you know, something like that. But I found that they're not always foolproof either. So if you're finding that those built-in tools don't work, this is a great way to do it. You could use Text Edit on the Mac as well. The Mac actually has a little utility that you can download called Text Cleaner. Does the exact same thing, because this is not an uncommon problem on the web. There's always junk, especially from like Word documents where a lot of people are copying from, or just even the web. So it's important to clean that up before you get it in there. So,
right. Yeah. You know, and the reverse is true. It's not always WYSIWYG editors that you have challenges with. Sometimes I screen scrape across a page on the web and want to paste that into a Word document, and I end up with some really funky formatting. Yep. So it's nice just to scrub it all through a simple text editor that ignores all that formatting and cleans it up for you.
Great. Mm-hmm. Great first tip. We're off to a roaring start. Mm-hmm. Now, the disadvantage of me going first in the tips and you going first in the picks is you got a double header. So
yeah,
you're still on.
Did you think through that all the way or what? All right, I'm going to share my screen one more time. And this time I'm going to talk about my pick of the week, which is BookType. And it's from a company called Source Fabric. You can find it at sourcefabric.org/en/booktype. And BookType is kind of near and dear to our hearts, Martin, because this summer, as you mentioned earlier in the show, we collaborated on an ebook as part of our summer series. And you guys probably want to scoot over there and grab the final version of that. We concluded it, kind of wrapped up our discussion, and that's available on our resource page. But the tool that we used to do that was this tool called BookType. And one of our goals for writing the ebook was the ability to publish it in a lot of different formats so that those who wanted a PDF downloadable book for their computer or for printing in a typical PDF, standard format could get that. But those that wanted it on their Kindles or Nooks or whatever ebook reader software you use, we wanted to provide it in ebook reader software format as well. And BookType did that for us. We edited it in one place and then it produced it in all those different formats. Now, this kind of has two different flavors. There is a downloadable software. It's open source and free that you can use for BookType, or you can use what they call BookType Pro. I think I have some information up on that, which is basically a cloud-based hosted software. It's the same software, but they have it on a server where you can use it. This is a fee-based product, and Martin, I think we must have gotten in on the beta because we didn't pay any of these fees for our pro version. But I don't see a way to get it for free the way we did. It looks like it starts at $16 a month for the ability to do this. Now, this may not be for everyone. This was particularly helpful for us because it allowed us to collaborate. So if you're collaborating on a book, you might want some kind of cloud-based solution like this. But if you're just writing a book on your own, there's probably other solutions out there that wouldn't have the fees associated with it. I just wanted to give you a quick behind-the-scenes look at BookType Pro. You can see this is our WellsTech account, wellstech.booktypepro.pro. And this is our church and school website content ebook that we worked on this summer. So we can actually come in here and look at a draft of the book and, you know, scroll through the different chapters are laid out on the side. You can set up these groupings of chapters or headers, as well as the different chapter names. And you can go in and take a look at the various chapters And you can see that we were able to add different types of formatting, header layout, bullet points. There's definitely links and things throughout the site or the book. And easy to come back in and immediately get into edit mode. There's edit buttons all over the place. And when you go into edit mode, you have a WYSIWYG editor available to you, just like we were looking at on the Wells Tech site. Same kind of buttons and things. And if you want to copy and paste into here, it's really good to do it through Notepad as well. These buttons actually expand and there's more. They kind of hide some away so it's not too intimidating. But like I said, we can add pictures and do various formatting and links and things like that without a problem. And then the other part of the puzzle is that you can then publish to all these different formats. So if you wanted to publish in book format or ebook format, like I said, there's different ebook formats like for iPad and Kindle, that kind of thing. And you just go through this publish process as many times as you need to be able to publish in the different formats. In our case, we chose to publish in three formats. We did ebook in two different formats, and then I used this one called Screen PDF, which allowed us to publish the PDF version. So I went through this iteration of publishing three times. It takes maybe a minute or two for the size book that we had to go through the publication process, the creation of the EPUB file or the MOBI file or the PDF file. And then it provides a link down in this area where you can click to download those files. And then I just put those files where we were hosting the files so that you guys could get to them. So it's pretty straightforward interface. It certainly met our needs well. It was the first time we had done a job like this, and I think we picked a good tool for the job. But unfortunately, now the hosting part does have a fee associated with it, which we didn't have to pay because we got in early. But that's my pick of the week. It's called BookType.
Very nice. That reminds me, I still have to finish up that book with a nice conclusion. So, and then we'll let everybody know where they can get that stuff on our show notes page. It was fun. I thought it was easy to use, straightforward. It didn't get in your way. You did more on the publishing side, then it sounds like that went well.
Yep, pretty easy process.
Formatting stayed clean and consistent. And
so. It did, and you can kind of control that and tweak that for each type of file that you're producing.
Very good. Sally, my pick of the week is a tool that I noticed looking at your screenshot you already use called OneTab. And again, I mentioned that both of my tip and pick are Chrome-based. And so this is a Chrome plugin. And this is for people who have trouble managing their tabs, let's say that. So if they may have 10, 20, 30 tabs open at one time, or even just a few that they want to clean up. So rather than close them all or save them all, this little plugin allows you to close them all at once, but you really don't lose them. It creates a little web page with links to all those tabs. So you save the memory, you know, or the processing that might be going on in those tabs by closing them all. Sometimes Chrome slows down a little bit when you've got a lot of tabs open. So this is a lifesaver for that kind of scenario. So you don't have to close the whole thing down and open it again. But you can still get those tabs back. So there's some nice features with this as well. Not only just closing tabs, but the ability to save collections of tabs and even share those tabs. So I'm going to just demonstrate here. I've got a number of tabs open. Not a whole lot. So I've got six tabs here, and I could close each one or bookmark them if I were doing some research. But with one tab, all I have to do is click on the one tab button, which is a little funnel icon. And once I click that, then you'll notice that all the tabs disappear, and then just I have one window open called one tab, and it lists all the tabs that I had open. You know, Twitter, Weather Channel, those kinds of things are all just sitting here waiting for me to click on again. So if I wanted to open one up again, let's say Twitter, I would just click on Twitter and it would remove it from the list and open it in a tab again. So it becomes kind of a collapsible tab storage area. And you've got a number of features here as well. You can restore all of them at once. So you can come back and do that. You can delete all of them so they go away permanently. If you click on the More tab, you can name the tab group. So if it's a particular interest, so you're doing a research project, for instance, you could name the tab after that research project. You could lock the tab so that you couldn't accidentally delete it. You can star the tab so that it always comes up to the top, so if you've got tabs that you always go to. And then finally, you can share as a web page, which is really kind of cool. So if I click that link, it pops up a new tab with a kind of a short URL. It's not overly short, but it's fairly simple. And even a QR code that could be sent or scanned in. So I could copy this web link, send it via email or text or Twitter or Facebook, and somebody would be able to click on it and view all the tabs that I have just saved. So it's kind of like a Chrome-based Digo, so to speak, is the way I would put it. But probably its most useful feature is just to get all of those tabs together in one place in a nice list. So you could have collections of these one tab items for later usage. But it really just reduces, you know, kind of their motto is save 95% memory and reduce tab clutter, and works really well only on Chrome. I don't think there's a Firefox equivalent. I haven't actually done a lot of research on that, but just stumbled across this the other day, and I think I'm going to use this a lot, Sally.
Yeah, that was one of the ones I picked up at Google Summit this summer when I was in the presence of the Google gurus like Ben Friesen and Molly Schrader. I tried to make notes on every single extension that they use because I figured if they were valuable to Ben and Molly, they would be valuable to me as well.
I'm sorry, I might have stole one of your picks then.
That's okay. Not a problem. Good stuff.
Indispensable. Yeah, I think I'm going to enjoy using Chrome a little bit more now with the ability to do that. So, all right, Sally, we should probably do one last reminder about Wells Tech Camp.
That's right. It's coming up this weekend. I'm so excited, Martin, to meet all the Wells Techers face to face. We have over 110 people registered, so really an exciting event coming up. And if you can't be there in person, I encourage you to visit our wiki page, wellstechcamp.wikispaces.com, where we've posted a breakout schedule. It's a blank schedule right now. I'm a little bit of a type A personality. I'm a little nervous about this whole unconference thing, but it should work out great. We're going to fill in all these different topics and have some great discussion as we brainstorm and come up with ideas and things to discuss around technology and ministry. We've set aside 5 rooms and 4 different time slots. So we'll be filling in the topics that day. There'll be links on this breakout schedule to live notes that will be taken during each of the sessions. So everyone's invited to collaborate on the notes for the session. We're using Google Docs to do that. And then also at the top, I just wanted to point out to you, there's a place here where we're going to have links to what we hope is live streaming of each of the sessions. We're going to try and work our tech magic and do Google Hangouts on air from each of the session rooms. And this is where you're going to find those links to those live streams. So the breakout schedule is kind of your key to the day, especially if you're watching from afar. And we encourage you to participate as well and look forward to an exciting day at Wells Tech Camp.
Looking forward to it. I'm heading out on Friday. So spend a nice weekend in New Ulm. And meet a lot of people. We've got over 100 people signed up, so that's exciting.
Yes, it is.
Let's move on to our community feedback section, Sally.
Okay, we had a few things shared this week from our Wells Tech listeners, starting with our friend Tom Rosenau, who is at, I believe it's St. John's in Pigeon, Michigan. He serves as principal there, and he tagged an article from ITC in my classroom called 10 Google Forms for the Classroom. And, you know, he did mention this is an older article from 2008, but the ideas are very, very relevant for today. And many people are just unlocking the capability of Google Forms with their Google Apps for Education installation. So if you are new to Google Forms and are teaching, perhaps you want to use a form for one of these ideas, like getting to know your class, having them talk about their likes and dislikes, their interests. Maybe you want to ask them their summer activities or whatever via a Google form. They talked about using an emotion graph, using it for spelling tests, comprehension questions. This is really great. Just use a form at the end of your language arts class or whatever it may be. Maybe it's a social studies lesson, and have them answer the questions via a form instead of or in addition maybe to your traditional class discussions of the topics. Perhaps you could use a form for their weekly reading record. I know many schools have reading goals for the number of minutes or number of pages that students read.
Yeah, great way to track that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there's other ideas here for perhaps a guided reading record, a prior learning assessment, library book reviews, learning success. So a lot of things where you would normally want to gather feedback, have the students reflect on a lesson, whatever it may be, you certainly could implement Google Forms to assist with this. So I think it's a great find, Tom, and thank you very much for sharing it with Wells Tech.
Cool.
There was a tweet, and I failed to write down who shared this via Twitter, but I thought it was really cool. Basically, they said the People's Bible Commentary is like SparkNotes for Wells people. So those of you that are familiar with SparkNotes or maybe not so familiar, that's a kind of what I would call cliff notes of the digital age, where you can go and read and learn more about a particular book or whatever it may be. And I think it's a good parallel to think that the People's Bible is the SparkNotes parallel. And many of the People's Bibles are now available in digital format as well, so you can carry them with you on your ebook reader. But People's Bible, if you aren't familiar, is a commentary series produced by our Northwestern Publishing House. So you can read a section of scripture, and then you can read some really easy to read and relevant and interesting commentary to help you understand scripture much better.
It was Mike S. on Twitter, Mike Strews, MrStrews.com. Must be a Wells teacher. He's got his own blog. So thank you, Mike.
Yeah. And then finally, I pinned something on our Pinterest board. It was a link to this educational technology and mobile learning blog site, where they talked about 10 important things for students to be good digital citizens. And I think as teachers and even as adults, we need to know that manners do matter. It's kind of about netiquette, being a better digital citizen, and we need to support our students and help them understand things about, being polite and not abusing things just because you're on the internet. You're not just anonymous. You need to play by the right rule book and things. So I think this is a great infographic that pulls together a lot of those ideas. So nicely check it
done.
Out.
Yeah, that's nicely done.
Mm-hmm. And I think that will do it for community feedback for this week, Martin.
Okay. If you want to contribute to the show, wellstech.wells.net is the place to go. Just take a look at the icons all across the top, and I'm sure one social network that you're involved with is there, or one format or one communications channel that you're most comfortable with is available to you, whether it be email, voicemail, or anything in between. Sally, next week we should have Wells Tech Camp behind us, so that's really going to be what we're going to be talking about, taking some of the highlights, maybe some video clips and interviews, whatever, just kind of a look back at what all we did on Saturday in New Ulm, Minnesota. So I'm looking forward to that show as well, kind of reliving the moment, so to speak.
Yep, should be fun.
Yep. Let's close the show with the music of Michael Schrader, a friend of mine. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We will talk to you next week.
Greater love has no one than this, that he laid down his life for his friends.
And I don't remember how it all began. And you were always there, even when I'd forget. And as you witnessed my life's joy and pain, we're always there, a breath away. And I don't recall how it all began, but you taught me how to define the word friend. And though I did fail you time after time, always you. Like my life trickles down my window pane. Fleeting fast to the path of the choices I'd made. And you'd always listen, but I don't always take your advice. Still, you'd forgive and forget my mistakes every time. And I don't recall how it all began, but you taught me how to define the word friend. And though I did fail you time after time, always you. Don't understand, and I don't comprehend the gifts. Why you would care, but you are there. Condemned you when you stood in for me. Paying the price, you sacrificed yourself for me. And I don't deserve it, and I can't comprehend. What kind of love it took to be my friend. And I don't recall how it all began, but you taught me how to define the word friend. And though I didn't fail you time after time, always you will be a friend. Thank you for being. Thank you for being.